Sai Ram, and welcome to this presentation of a series of talks on the Vedas, delivered earlier by Professor Venkatraman over Radio Sai. In all, he gave 10 talks, one every week as a part of a series entitled Musings by Professor Venkatraman. Professor Venkatraman is a scientist by training and profession and is by no stretch of imagination an expert on the Vedas. And yet, he chose to devote an entire series to that topic. Why? Some of that explanation would be offered by him direct in his first talk, which you would soon hear. But meanwhile, by way of setting the stage, it is pertinent to offer the listener some background. Anybody who has come recently to Prashanti Nilayam, the abode of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, would have unfailingly noticed that invariably, when Baba comes out for darshan, a group of people chant the Vedas. This is a somewhat recent practice, but its roots go back over half a century when Baba began to extensively draw attention to the lessons of the Vedas, not only in his various discourses, but also in personal interactions with devotees as well as Vedic scholars. His first serious discussions with Vedic scholars began when he started visiting the then princely state of Venkatagiri, somewhere in the 50s. The Raja of Venkatagiri was a very pious man and collected around him in his court a group of eminent Vedic pandits. And when Bhagwan Baba went there for a visit, inevitably there were many discussions, with of course the pandits being rather curious about the extent of Baba's knowledge of the Vedas and what his attitude to them was. Once they became aware that Baba's knowledge was not only extensive but also profound, they quickly overcame their doubts about his scholarship and began to flock around him. Soon, the presence of Vedic scholars in large numbers in Prashanti Nilayam became a regular affair, as also the performance of a yajna for world peace every year at the time of Navratri. One of the many Vedic scholars who was so drawn to Baba was late Kamavadani, a scholar par excellence. While most came for brief visits, Kamavadani was different. He came, he saw, and realized Prashanti Nilayam was his true home, settled down almost immediately, and then spent the rest of his life there, living to the ripe old age of 100. By training and upbringing, Kamavadani was very orthodox and traditional, but after observing Baba's broad vision, realized that the Vedas cannot and should not be held as a private preserve of a select few. He understood that Vedas were universal in scope and content, and must therefore be accessible to all without any bias or artificial barriers. Thus, when Baba established a university in the early 80s of the 20th century and asked Kamavadani to teach Vedas to the students, Kamavadani did so with great enthusiasm, without making any fuss about caste or creed of the student. In due course, when a large number of students became well trained in Veda chanting, they took over from Kamavadani the task of chanting the Vedic invocation before the commencement of Baba's discourses. Years passed, and after having lived a full life, Kamavadani gave up his body. By this time, Baba's students were fully prepared to take over Vedic chanting on all festive and ceremonial occasions. Quite apart from all this, Baba regularly made extensive references to the timeless message of the Vedas and its universal aspects. It is no surprise then that a day came somewhere around 2003 or so, when Vedic chanting by students became a daily affair, particularly at darshan time. Inevitably, more and more people made special efforts to learn chanting so that they too could join Baba's students every day. Since Baba placed no restrictions, everyone pitched in, including women, traditionally forbidden to chant the Vedas. Children of the primary school here, and even overseas devotees who were simply swept away by the sonic grandeur of the Vedas, took to chanting with great enthusiasm. Thus, it has now become a fairly common experience to see groups from such faraway places as Japan or Brazil chanting the Vedas in Baba's presence. Watching all this, Professor Venkatraman wondered about the idea of giving the listeners of Radio Sai a series of talks offering a broad and popular overview of what the Vedas are all about, why they are timeless, what is unique and universal about their message, and why that message is so critical at the present juncture. It should be mentioned that the series was addressed particularly to young Indians on the one hand, and also to curious foreigners who want a simple, easy to understand introduction free from mumbo jumbo. In short, the series is a broad brush overview and not a scholarly discourse series. Well, meeting that challenge is the task the professor set for himself. And maybe we will now let you hear him talk so that you can form your own judgment about whether or not he succeeded. As the introducer and presenter of this series, I would at this point merely like to say that in his first talk, Professor Venkatraman begins with personal recalls of his youth when he got introduced to the Vedic ambience then prevailing and his own personal first exposure to Vedic mantras at the time of Upanayanam ceremony. He admits that he went through the drill under protest and did not like it one bit then. However, when he came here to Prashanti, he realized all that so-called bitter experience really held the key to eternal wisdom. Let me now step aside and allow you to hear it all directly from our speaker. Over to the professor.
Loving Sairam and greetings from Prashanti Nilayam. In this and some of the talks that would follow, I intend to say something about the Vedas. On the face of it, this is an atrocious proposition, considering that I cannot chant even a few hymns from the Vedas. Yet, despite this ignorance, the Vedas hold such a fascination for me that I cannot restrain myself from speaking about them. You might ask, how can you talk about the Vedas when you know so little? Well, that's a good question, but my reply is that though I know little about the technical aspects, I have been privileged to have a ringside view of some aspects, and it is on that I am largely going to base these talks. My earliest recollection of something to do with the Vedas goes back to about 1940 or so, maybe even a couple of years earlier. At that time, I occasionally paid a visit to a small town named Manamadurai, about 40 kilometers to the southeast of the famous temple city of Madurai. Manamadurai is in Ramnad district of Tamil Nadu and is on the route from Madurai to Rameswaram on the southeast coast of India. Just to remind you, according to our legends, it is from Rameswaram that Rama launched his invasion of Lanka. Rameswaram is thus a popular pilgrim center. The British, when they ruled India, laid a rail track from Madras to Dhanushkodi, just beyond Rameswaram. Every day, a train named Boatmail would go from Madras to Dhanushkodi and also back from Dhanushkodi to Madras. This train would pass through Manamadurai, and the passage of the boat mail used to be the big event there every day. The train would cross the river Vaigai across a bridge, and lots of people would gather on the river sands just to catch a glimpse of the train as it went by. I have done it too. By the way, this train was called boat mail because it would carry mail from England meant for Madras that came via Colombo. In those days, the big ships from England would sail direct to Colombo instead of to Madras. The mail would be unloaded in Colombo and sent by train to a place in northern Ceylon, as Sri Lanka used to be called in those days. From there, a boat would carry the mail to Dhanushkodi in India, where the mail would be transferred to the boat mail bound for Madras. Mail from Madras to England would follow the reverse route. Now, why am I mentioning all this in a talk supposed to be on the Vedas? Just to say something about Manamadurai and a Vedic school there. This school was about two doors away from the ancestral home of my father's family, and in this house stayed two of my father's elder brothers. I have gone there a few times, and invariably I used to be fascinated by the non-stop chants coming from two doors away. This Vedic school, or Veda Patasala as it is technically known, was apparently in existence for many, many decades, having been founded by a wealthy Chettiar family. For the record, I should mention that the Chettiars belonged to the trading community, and in those days, trade and commerce took them to Burma, Malaya, Singapore, and even places like Laos and Cambodia. The Chettiars were generally prosperous and, in keeping with the traditions of those times, spent a good part of their wealth in charitable activities. For example, many of them endowed a lot of money for temples. Others built chowtries or rest houses for pilgrims visiting holy shrines like Rameshwaram or Tirupati or Benares. Yet others established Veda Patasalas like the one I mentioned a short while ago. The Veda Patasala was essentially a Vedic school which Brahmin boys, often from somewhat poor families, entered when they were young, around the age of 5 or 7, after going through the Upanayanam ceremony. Many of you might have seen mass Upanayanam ceremony performed by Swami from time to time. Well, what exactly is this ceremony and what is its significance? I shall make a few remarks on this here and maybe come back to this theme later on for an in-depth exploration. To understand what this ceremony is all about, we must go back to the Vedic age, which means a few thousand years back in time. In those times, a boy born in a Brahmin family was allowed to roam like a child without any restrictions till the age of 5. On reaching that age, there was a change of gear, and the Upanayanam ceremony signaled this gear change. The ceremony was essentially an initiation into a disciplined life with strong emphasis on sense and mind control and focus on God. One might wonder, why all this? Was it not a severe infliction on a 5-year-old? Well, that is the way we would think based on today's environment. But 5,000 and odd years ago, life was different, and Brahmins had the duty of sustaining and spreading spiritual knowledge. In practical terms, it was the Brahmins who advised one and all, including kings, on matters relating to dharma and the observance of various rituals prescribed in the scriptures. The responsibility assigned to Brahmins was onerous, and the training for the job had to begin early. By the way, in later talks, I shall have much to say about many of these rituals, and the Vedic mantras chanted on those occasions. Okay, let me get back to the Upanayanam business. The high point of the ceremony is what is called Brahmopadesam, and it consists in the father whispering the sacred Gayatri mantra into the ear of the young boy. I am sure you all know about the Gayatri mantra, especially since Swami has spoken about it so many times. Maybe I shall come back to it later. Right now I am mentioning the Gayatri mantra just by way of saying that once the boy hears it, he is supposed to be born again, this time spiritually. Childhood period is over, and as a result of this new spiritual birth, his life now takes a different turn. I might in passing mention that the Jews have an initiation ceremony called Bar Mitzvah, and I believe the Parsi community too has an initiation ceremony. The details and even the objectives of these initiation ceremonies might not quite be the same as the Upanayanam ceremony, but we might keep in mind the fact that many ancient societies did have a ceremony to mark the transition from childhood to boyhood. A boy who has undergone the Upanayanam ceremony is called a brahmachari. There is a mistaken notion that a brahmachari means a bachelor. Yes, at the practical level, a brahmachari is unmarried, no doubt. But as Swami has pointed out, the word brahmachari means much more and has nothing really to do with marital status. According to Swami, a true brahmachari is one whose mind is totally focused on Brahman or God. This brings me back to the Veda Patasala. In ancient times, the brahmachari went to a guru and spent many years in residence in his ashram, learning the Vedas and leading a disciplined life as enjoined in the scriptures. After completing the studies, which took many years, the brahmachari would take respectful leave of the guru and enter life. He would then get married and serve society in every way possible, especially by guiding people of various communities who are not versed in the scriptures on their duties in life. I have already made a brief reference to this a short while ago. Life has changed with the passing of time, and by the 19th century, most Brahmins in India were engaged in tasks other than the propagation of scriptural knowledge. Many became prosperous landlords, wholly preoccupied in supervising agricultural activities on their farms. And when Western-style schools and colleges were established by the British, many Brahmins happily embraced Western education, especially as it gave them an opportunity to enter professional life as an administrator in the government, as a lawyer, as a teacher, as a doctor, and so on. As a result of all such sociological forces, it became increasingly necessary to establish Vedic schools where priests could be trained. Please do not think that Vedic schools came into existence only because of the developments I have just mentioned. In fact, they existed even earlier, mainly to give Brahmin boys a serious exposure to the Vedas. But sociological changes made it more imperative than ever to have schools that would train people to become priests. To get back to Manamadurai in the Veda Patasala there, I did not pay much attention to it. But its presence did register somewhere in my memory, and it was only years later that I appreciated the role this and other such patasalas played. For the record, I must also mention that sometime in the 50s, Swami established a Veda Patasala here in Prashanthi Nilayam. It was managed by late Kamavadani, a Vedic scholar par excellence. He lived to the ripe old age of 100, and I have heard Swami speak many times about him, most affectionately. I have also had the privilege of seeing him a few times in his later years. Swami established the Veda Pathashala not for training priests, but to expose his students to the importance of the Vedas and understanding the need to preserve the Vedas. Incidentally, there were no restrictions, and anyone who had a serious interest in the Vedas and a keenness to learn it was admitted into Swami's Veda Pathashala. To put it differently, it was not a case of Brahmins only. It is thanks to the pioneering effort of late Sri Kamavadani that we see so many students effortlessly chanting various portions of the Vedas almost every day during darshan, both in the morning and in the evening. Let me now cut back to the year 1947. That was when, on the insistence of my grandmother, my father performed the Upanayanam ceremony for me. It was a four-day affair celebrated in the best of traditions in a small village in South India, very much given to tradition. There were many things associated with the ceremony that I positively detested, but then I had no choice. I just had to obey. Many restrictions were placed on me that made me very angry at that time, but there was precious little I could do except to comply. One thing I realized then was that having undergone the Upanayanam ceremony, I was now required to perform a ritual called Sandhya Vandanam 3 times a day, once in the morning, once in the afternoon, and once more in the evening. Among other things, as a part of this ritual, I had to chant the Gayatri 32 times. My mother was very strict and would not give me food unless I had completed Sandhya Vandanam. This would drive me mad, but I had no choice. Strangely, I did not think of cheating. I don't know why. I suppose it was all divine grace. Though with great reluctance, I somehow pushed myself every day to chant all the mantras, which I had sort of got by heart. I mention all this for a variety of reasons. The first is that I did not know then that the mantras I was reluctantly chanting were all from the Vedas. Secondly, no one took the trouble to explain to me what these mantras were all about. Perhaps if I had understood the inner significance, I might have accepted it all in a better spirit. I shall come back to the Sandhya Vandanam business later, but right now let me just quote one sentence from that ritual, because it is so profound. That sentence is, Akashat patitam toyam yadagachati sagaram sarvadeva namaskaraha kesavam pradigachati. Roughly it means, just as all the water that comes down from the sky eventually finds its way to the ocean, all the prayers that I now offer to the various deities would eventually be received by Kesava, the Supreme Lord. What a profound thought. That is the beauty of the Vedas. Superficially, they might all be about rituals, some of which might, in this day and age, appear not only irrelevant but also objectionable. However, when one goes deeper, it is an entirely different matter. One cannot then but admire those ancients for the profundity of their wisdom. All this I shall discuss in detail later. By the way, I think it is appropriate to mention that Swami often quotes the last part of the mantra I just referred to. Swami says, Sarvajiva namaskaram kesavam pradigachati. Sarvajiva tiraskaram kesavam pradigachati. It means, all the salutations we offer to fellow human beings ultimately reach the Lord. If instead of salutations we hurl abuse at our fellow human beings, they also eventually reach only the Lord. So, says Swami, we had better be careful about abusing others. We may think we are abusing so and so, but in reality, it is God who is being abused. We wouldn't want to do that, would we? Well, for the present, maybe I shall stop here, and next time I shall take you a little deeper into the Vedas and their significance.
well. That brings us to the end of the first talk, and I hope you liked it. And now, we invite you to experience true Vedic bliss by listening for a while to some real high-quality Veda chanting before we move on to the next talk.
Yaschandramasa ayatanam veda
ayatanavan bhavate
apave chandramasa ayatanam
ayatanavan bhavate
evam veda
apam ayatanam veda
ayatanavan bhavate
nakshatrane va apam ayatanam
ayatanavan bhavate
yo nakshatrana bhajatanam veda
ayatanavan bhavate
apave nakshatrana bhajatanam
ayatanavan bhavate
evam veda
ayatanavan bhavati
evam veda
yat sunavam pratishthitam.